This episode is brought to you by Factor. What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. As shared in part one of his story, Seth Gale is a father, veteran, construction industry professional, speaker, and advocate from Ohio. Seth faced ongoing sexual abuse in his youth and recently began to share about his experiences and all that came next legally and personally. Seth's mission is to use his story to bring awareness to society and offer hope to other survivors. We are so grateful he is here to do so with us today, especially considering April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
I cannot get the words out. I couldn't breathe. And out of nowhere, Jacob goes, "He touched you, didn't he? Mondo touched you." The next thing he says is, "He did it to me too." I could not fucking believe it. The next thing he says is just even better. I don't even think he realizes how well he handled the situation, because the next thing he says is, "What do you want to do about it? I'll follow your lead." And I was like, fuck this guy. We got to fucking report him. We go to the hospital. A police officer walks in. He got the call that day saying, "We have a sexual abuse case. Do you want to handle it?" And he reluctantly, maybe, because that's a tough thing to handle, is like, "Okay, I'll do it." Officer Chad Couples, freaking awesome guy. He was so calm and collected with me. Like I said, this is his first time handling a sexual abuse case, and he's been a cop for 12 years. We start talking. I knew that if I was going to catch this guy, Mondo, and put his ass away, that I was going to have to spill the freaking beans. I was going to have to just tell him what happened to me. Because if I didn't, it might not be enough to get him. So when he asked me what happened, and I'm talking to the nurses about what happened, I tell them all these horrific stories about him. I tell them, as a matter of fact, there was a towel next to his bed right now because he had molested me that weekend. And I guarantee if you go and get that towel, it'll have my DNA because that's what he used to clean me up with. I said, there's a jar of Vaseline next to his bed. The nurses, they said, "Can we do a rape kit on you?" They didn't know how they were going to get enough evidence that day. They needed to get him right away. I said, "Well, I haven't taken a shower yet." I knew I could not take a shower Saturday night or Sunday because I needed his freaking DNA on me. When I told the nurses that, they were floored. I remember them being so proud of me. I take off my clothes. They take my clothes away to test them. I remember being there on my hands and knees on this table while the doctor's taking a cotton swab. They test me in three different areas for DNA. I know they had found DNA in a couple places. The next thing that happens sends me into a violent tantrum. My grandpa gets a phone call, and my grandma says, "Mondo's here." Mondo had returned to my home. My grandma was there alone. Almost 6 years that I had known Mondo, he had never once in those 6 years left and come back to my house. I knew something was terribly, terribly wrong. I thought he was there to kill us. So my grandpa, the first thing he says is, "Well, don't tell them we're at the hospital." My grandparents, being that they're older, their phones are like boomboxes. You can hear it from a mile away, especially back in 2011 when they had the flip phones that were super loud, specifically for older people. He says, "Well, don't tell them we're at the hospital." And when he said that, I looked at Chad and I was like, "You gotta go." I just started freaking the fuck out. I was grabbing my hair, pulling my hair out. I was balling my fists up, punching the tables, throwing things. I was trying to rip the sheets apart. the hospital gown apart, sweating and screaming, and snot was coming out of my nose. They all were trying to restrain me, trying to hold me down and calm me down because I knew something bad was going to happen. Out of nowhere, my grandma says he left. I don't really know what happened between him and my grandma, but he just left. I wish I would have asked my grandma more about that day before she passed away. I interviewed the police officer about this day just a couple weeks ago, and that's up on YouTube.
The Broken Cycle Media team is extremely grateful that Seth gave us consent to share portions of a recent interview he conducted with Officer Couples. The entire conversation is very powerful, and we encourage you to visit the episode notes for a link to access the full interview.
The day that I met Seth, I was working patrol for the police department in 2011, so I was 31, 32. I'd been on the road for about 12 years. Small town, USA. This was my first time taking the lead on a sexual assault case. I go into the exam room, and here's this 15, 16-year-old kid sitting there. He mentions right away, are you related to Mrs. Couples? And I'm like, that's my wife. I'm like, oh, great. Here's a report builder right there. We've got a building block, something in common. So we can work off of that. Even though you were a victim of this heinous act, you were still trying to protect other people other than yourself. That was the main impression I got from you at the time. This kid cares more about other people than himself. I can visually see you sitting there in that hospital room, the panic on your face, Mondo calling you and texting you, trying to see where you're at and what you're doing. I got all the info, got the nurse's report, the sexual assault test kit that they perform at the hospitals. We established that it occurred in my jurisdiction. In the state of Ohio, 13 and under is automatic rape with someone over the age of 13. So I left there and I'm like, all right, I got to go find this guy. I'm thinking, all right, we're going to have a manhunt, all points bulletin, look for this dude. I pull in by his mom's place and he's getting out of his minivan. I walk up, introduce myself.
When you first saw him, what'd you think?
I thought lots of things, but I'm thinking, oh, this turd, he's going down. So I made contact, identified myself and said, could you come to the police station? I'd like to ask you some questions. Well, what's this about? And I'm like, I'll tell you when we get there. I wanted him to voluntarily go with me so it wouldn't be an in-custody situation. Dude gets in his van and follows me to the station. We go up in the elevator together. We're chit-chatting the whole way and we go into an interview. I'm trying to keep my cool because I want him to voluntarily disclose. I'm trying not to be overly aggressive. I don't want to intimidate him. I don't want to scare him. I don't want to have him clam up on me. He doesn't know what all has been disclosed. Get him sat down in the interview room. Leave the door open. I tell him, you're not under arrest. I just want to ask you some questions. This goes back to rapport building. I start talking about video games. It was a couple minutes maybe. And dude goes, so what is this all about? And I said, I got a call from Seth Gale this morning. This is going to be pretty crucial. And I kind of looked at his response to that. And he's like, so what did he say? And I said, well, he explained that there'd been some sexual contact between you two. He leaned back, no. There was a senior officer out in the lobby watching on the video because we had video set up. And he could tell that I might be losing it. So he pops in, sits down and says, Seth tells us that there's sexual contact that's been reported. We did a test and we're going to your house with a search warrant. What are we going to find? Mondo finally says, can I get a drink? And normally that's when you know somebody's ready to talk because their throat's dry, they're parched, got them a drink of water. And he sits back and goes, okay, there was some sexual contact between Seth and I. We're like, what does that entail? And he goes, I had him perform fellatio on me. Fellatio, what's that? You want to get as much detail as you can. And he goes, he performed oral sex. And right there, done. It was not an in-custody interview, so anything he says is admissible.
So if I arrest you and sit you down in a room, you are not free to leave. I'm going to ask you these questions, but I also have to advise you of your Miranda rights.
Yep.
If it's a non-custody interview, whatever you say to me is of your own free will. The door's open. You can leave anytime you want, and I make that clear. And if they don't leave, whatever they say is admissible.
And then I lay out the incidences that you explained, and he basically confesses to it all. I leave while the other guy keeps with the interview, start doing my paperwork for intake. He's going to jail right then. I go out, finish my paperwork. I don't know how long it was, but he comes out, and I'm like, well, right now you're under arrest for unlawful sexual conduct with a minor. Put your hands behind your back. Couldn't get his hands behind his back. So I'm like, all right, I'm cuffing him in the front. I'm not concerned with this dude being a threat to me. Take him downstairs, put him in the car. I'm driving him to jail, get to jail, and then you do the whole intake process. He sits in an intake room over here. I go over here and do my paperwork. The other guys went out and served a search warrant. I come out to go get my cuffs back, and he thanks me and shakes my hand. That may have been relief to him. I expect to go to trial and testify, and I never hear a thing. I never get a subpoena for court. So I look it up later on, the next month or two, he had pled guilty to 4 charges.
The fact that he pled, he knew he was screwed, and he knew he was a dirtbag. So I kind of felt some solace in that as well.
They were expecting to have this full-blown chase. I told them, he's 6'5", 380 pounds. He's not going to go down without a fight, and he's got a gun. He'd always threatened to kill himself by shooting himself, and he told me he had a gun. I guess Chad pulls up on the guy by himself. Long story short, gets Mondo to follow him to the jail to ask him a couple questions. And what is unbelievably critical and impressive, this is why Chad deserves so much credit for this. I'm trying to do everything I can for this guy right now to get him recognized by the state of Ohio. He took this man back to the station, not in custody. He was not under arrest. So he did not have to go back there. He did not have to talk. He did not have to participate. Mondo could have just gotten up and left whenever he wanted. They had not searched his apartment yet. They didn't have anything on him other than what I had said, which I think was enough to arrest him. That's pretty much the extent of Mondo's day. You go back and they do the search warrant. They did find the towel. They found the jar of Vaseline next to his bed. And that's what they were going there for, because I had described that so vividly to them. When I reported him, I just went on about my day. I woke up. I ate some eggs and toast. I don't know what I'm going to do this weekend, because I don't have any friends. I don't have any plans. I just played video games and went on about my life. I went to school a month later. Nobody knew what happened to me. It was never in the news. I met a couple guys through the wrestling team. I hung out with them every weekend. I moved on with my life. I wasn't a part of the guy's court hearing or nothing like that. A month or two later, I hear Mondo pleads guilty. He gets 10 years in prison. That was back in 2011.
Thank you to Factor for sponsoring this episode. Life is hard enough as it is. Figuring out what to eat every day shouldn't be a stressor too. That's why I love Factor. They offer a stress-free solution with their delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Plus, their weekly menu offers 35 options, including choices like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. They even have gourmet premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus to choose from. They also have more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. Factor is also celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Your subscription can even be tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with true flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Just head to factormeals.com/WCN50 and use code WCN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code WCN50 at factormeals.com/WCN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Mondo pleads guilty. He gets 10 years in prison. That was back in 2011. Since being raped in that man's bed at 13 years old and 15 years old, putting him away in prison, I have gone on to serve my country for 8 years honorably in a combat setting. I've been all over the world. I've been to 10 different countries, been all over the United States. I'll never forget the first time I went to Clearwater Beach. It's not a fancy beach by any means. But the first time I was at Clearwater Beach when I was 21, I was almost crying because I was on this dock watching the sunset. People don't understand how powerful that is. But when you've come from the darkest hell that you can come from, just to go and see the sunset on the beach is a freaking big deal. I knew the time was coming for him to get out. I wasn't sure when it was going to happen. I knew it was 10 years, which is not enough. That's why I want to be a part of an organization that can formulate a sound plan, and we can find every state that has a problem. We can go to each state or make it a federal thing. A serial crime, you should not be allowed to walk on the street after doing that to a child. He was up for parole in 2019. He pleads his case for parole. He gets denied.
Were you a part of that parole hearing by any chance?
I was not a part of the parole hearing. I was in Afghanistan at the time. I didn't even know that was happening. The only thing that I really regret from that whole situation was not being able to go to court at all. I was never a part of that process. I wish I could have gone back and just looked at him one more time and been like, fuck you, I got you. He would be out walking the streets today, doing whatever the hell he wanted to do. But a few months later, he dies in December of 2019, a year or two before he was about to be free to walk the streets.
My grandma, she passed away in 2019 as well. When I was in Afghanistan, she passed away right before he did, actually, oddly enough. I just wish I could tell my grandma today that I'm okay and look what I'm doing. I'm about to change the world and open up people's minds to these things. It takes a story to do this, and it takes a hard, graphic story that people need to hear and understand, because this is like small town America and this is happening.
When I was 23, I was getting out of the Army. I watched the R. Kelly documentary. So when I watched that story, it really triggered me. I had just gotten back from Afghanistan. I didn't know what I was going to do outside of the Army. I was married already. I had my wife and both my kids. I knew I was going to do something, but I didn't know what. I was already panicking. And so when I listened to that documentary, it really skyrocketed my emotions. And I was as close to killing myself as I've ever been. That documentary was very painful, but it helped me learn. That's why I listened to stories. I started wanting to get on a podcast and to share my story because I was listening to so many other podcasts. People are telling their stories, and it doesn't matter if it relates or not to you exactly. We have completely different lives. They have the same exact feelings as me after going through trauma. And that's what's really made me realize, man, my story will help somebody. That's why I tell my story. Me and my wife, I would say we've gotten a lot closer. Her family's been supportive. Her father, I look at him like my dad. I never had a father in my life. When I get booked for a podcast or my book is coming up or a speaking event, I look out to reach out to him and tell him, because I just get excited to share that news with another guy who I look up to. My wife has been very supportive. I guess I didn't tell her as much about this as I thought I did when we first started dating. But when I met my wife, I kind of knew we would get married or something. I don't know. I disclosed some pretty good information to her pretty quickly. We got married 6 months into dating, but she read through my book and she told me, I don't know how you're alive. I never did any formal therapy. I still haven't. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but she was kind of like, I don't know how the hell you're alive. But she's been very supportive. People ask me how I've overcome things. But here's my answer, plain and simple. I'm going to be damned if all of that shit's going to happen to me and I'm not going to get something out of it. I'm not going to go through all this damn pain, suffering, and struggling and just sit here. If I'm going to suffer, I'm going to get something from it in the end. And that's what I'm doing. I think a lot of men, because we're too tough to talk, they don't want to talk about these things and then they get bottled up. You need to be tough enough to talk about it and to heal from it.
Here's another excerpt of Officer Chad Couples from Seth's YouTube interview, which is linked in the episode notes.
Responding to sexual assaults, you pick up pieces of that trauma and take it with you. There's no way to escape it. When you finally get some good coping mechanisms, then you start to work through it. There's several types of therapy when dealing with trauma. One of them is reliving your story over and over again. You start pulling the knives out of it, and then it just becomes, okay, this happened. I've spent time in the VA, in the hospital, and there were guys that had a little cassette tape that they would record their traumatic events on, and they would sit with headphones and listen to it over and over again, try to take the sting out of it. It takes the sting away, but it doesn't solve what that trauma's caused. You can put Band-Aids on it all you want, but until you rewire that brain and how it reacts to that trauma. But the trauma experience from dealing with other people's trauma is real, and you can't escape it. That's why so many cops and firemen and EMTs get so burnt out got to have a way to cope that's not going to be destructive to yourself or others. If you let it eat you, it's going to destroy everything, including yourself, including relationships. Somebody's got to show you this is how it's supposed to go. Otherwise, you're going to have a skewed sense of, well, this is how a relationship works, because that's what you know. Everyone you know, I guarantee, has some sort of trauma, some less than others and some more than others, of course. But you don't have to live your life in that shadow.
I tried to channel all of my energy into something positive. I'm not mad at my mom. I'm not mad at my dad. I'm not mad at this guy. I'm not mad at his family. And I have no negative emotions towards anything that happened to me. It's not a weight on my shoulders anymore, especially in the last few weeks. 3 weeks ago, I addressed this finally. For 13 years, I've hid it behind closed doors where only a handful of people knew. At first, I was like, man, this is going to be tough. But I've received nothing but positive remarks. I will eventually come across somebody who says what they got to say, and that's fine. It's not worth entertaining. But I've gotten so many messages, and you can see them on my Instagram. There's like testimonials reel where so many people have reached out to me and been like, this is incredible. Your story is incredible. It's powerful. I appreciate the hell out of every one of those messages. That means so much to me. I'm not looking for justice. I'm not going to get that justice. He's gone and he's dead. The world didn't stop turning. The sun kept coming up. It certainly can help somebody else heal. That's what I'm trying to do. I tell people when I speak, you cannot be grateful for the things that you have in this world unless you understand the perspective on the other side. Unless you understand both sides of the street, you don't know how happy or grateful you should be just to have food and water. I'm talking to some high school students tomorrow about my story and about wellness and resilience in a much more toned down conversation, obviously, but people just don't want to hear these stories because they are horrendous, but it gives you perspective on life. And that's what I try to do. I try to give people perspective so that they can be more grateful and they can use that to be stronger in life. That is what I'm doing now to be the example. If I went through all of this, I pissed my life away, that would be a sad story. But my story is not fucking sad because I'm 29 years old and my story's just started. I am going to change the world. I'm going to change the way that people look at this shit. I'm going to change people's mindsets. I'm going to change people's lives. It's not a sad story. It's a powerful story. I've traveled all these countries. Now I run ultra marathons. I compete in jiu-jitsu. I'm this 205-pound, pretty muscular, bearded man who's a combat veteran who you would never expect to hear this from. I have won awards. I was the number one construction manager at the third largest home builder in America in my first year with the company. If you think that you don't belong, there is a freaking place in this world. You belong in the world. If you think that you don't, there are people out there that have gone through the same things you have. They're surviving and thriving and doing good things. I'm not a hero, and nobody else is either for doing what they're doing. I'm just trying to help others heal. And if you want to report or you don't want to report, it doesn't make you better or worse than the next person. Don't compare yourself. I want people to understand that you can go through some shit in your life and you can come out on top. It is not going to be easy, but you can do it. I want to show people this shit is fucking hard. You're going to have to wake up every day and you're going to have to work. I just don't want people to think that they are defined by this moment in their life. There are things you can do. You can search me on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook as well, LinkedIn. My name is Seth Gale. Type that in, you'll probably find me, but my Instagram handle is Go Beyond the Shadows, YouTube as well. Mondo's House. I've got pictures of this on my Instagram and my YouTube. I went up to Ohio to take some pictures. When I went up there, I looked at his house. I wanted to go inside, but there was people living there, so I couldn't. That didn't bother me at all. Like, I spent so many weekends there. And then to go back and look at his mom's house and then look at the last house that I lived in as well with my mom, where I had that hole in my ceiling. I wanted to document it because that's part of my life and that's where I came from. I'm glad I was able to do that. I'm also trying to get all the court documents emailed to me and trying to get the transcripts to put in my book. I'm actually going to get to interview Jacob next weekend. We have never really talked about this in depth, so I'm excited to get some more details and hear his side of the story.
I think that these practices remove some of the power that it might have had at one point.
Yep. Most of everything I'm going to put out there is on Instagram. And then my email address is gobeyondtheshadows@gmail.com. So if you want to reach out via email, that's good as well.
You are just a force to be reckoned with. And I appreciate you sharing all of that with the world for us to heal everybody. Thank you.
Extrafamilial child sexual abuse can be defined as sexual abuse of a child that is perpetrated by someone outside of the victim's family structure. According to a 1983 study linked in the episode notes, quote, data obtained from a random sample of 930 adult women in San Francisco reflects that 31% reported at least one experience of extrafamilial sexual abuse before the age of 18 years. When both extrafamilial and intrafamilial categories of sexual abuse are combined, 38% of the women reported at least one experience before the age of 18 years. And 28% reported at least one such sexual assault experience before the age of 14 years. Only 2% of the cases of intrafamilial and 6% of the cases of extrafamilial child sexual abuse were ever reported to the police. End quote. Unfortunately, no comprehensive statistics about extrafamilial abuse of male victims was specifically available, nor is there much more information readily available about the statistical differences between extrafamilial and intrafamilial child sexual abuse or assault. However, it is interesting to note that a 1998 study by members of the Department of Psychology at the University of Saskatchewan found, quote, boys are younger than girls at the time of first abuse in samples of criminal justice and hospital referrals, end quote. The study also goes on to explain that although they found no significant difference between the severity or impact of extrafamilial and intrafamilial abuse, quote, extrafamilial offenders more often choose older victims and therefore more often use force, end quote. As several related resources report, child sexual abuse, whether intrafamilial or extrafamilial, often has lifelong effects on victims. It has been proven that to properly combat and prevent child sexual assault, multi-tier solutions must be employed. According to a study conducted by the University of Colorado School of Medicine and the Department of Pediatrics, quote, a family approach and services for parents, in addition to intervention for child victims, were determined to be key components in facilitating recovery. Clinical observations and client feedback showed positive outcomes for child victims and parents with crisis counseling, children's treatment groups, and parent support groups. End quote. If you suspect a child in your life is a victim of sexual assault or abuse, please visit the episode notes for resources and information about reporting.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
I was removed from the hotel room. My next memory. I was riding shotgun quickly in a moving car at night. Ever the naive optimist, I'd figured the hitman, my unlikely guardian angel, knew how tired I was and simply wanted to let me rest. He carried and laid me down in the woods. Unfortunately, there would not be much resting that night as the chemical concoctions left my body. Pain, nausea, convulsions. But as the sun came up, so did my hope.
Thank you to Factor for sponsoring this episode. Head to factormeals.com/WCN50 and use code WCN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.